Hey, what's up, Toby? It's
Hey.
another week for the Process Dev podcast.
Glad to be back. Glad to see you.
I know. We made it again.
Hallelujah.
Today, the topic is Parkinson's Law. Do you know what Parkinson's Law is?
I know Parkinson's and I know law, and I have a hunch it may not have anything to do with either.
No, it has nothing to do with either. Although I did, yeah, my uncle did have Parkinson's, so that was really sad.
Yeah, that
anyway,
is not a
all right.
funny topic, but tell me about Parkinson's Law. Parkinson's
all right,
law.
Parkinson's Law is limit the time it takes to complete a task to what users expect it to take.
This is the back to the give a, if you need something done, give it to a busy person.
That is correct. That is 100% correct.
Wow.
Essentially, work fills the amount of time that is given, right? So you've been an adjunct professor forever,
right?
If you give your students 2 weeks to do something, how long does it take?
Right, usually about 2.5. At least for about 20% of the students. Oh my God, the irony, Chris, is it could be a 2-hour task, right? That's the kicker. That was me too in my undergraduate, you know.
I mean, it's all of us, right?
It is. If I have 3 things to do on a Saturday, I'll get 2 done. If I have 15 things to do, I'll have 15 done by noon. You're absolutely right. Yeah.
Well, and it's crazy, right? Because, like, first of all, we're terrible at time, managing time as humans.
Yeah.
You get generative AI to figure out how to predict time well, and you will be a trillionaire. You will be the first trillionaire on Earth.
I think there's truth to that. Time is it's such an elusive construct, and we inflict that concept on each other, and then none of us manage it well. So,
well, maybe I'm a little wrong here, right? Because we were supposed to have autonomous cars in 1980, I think, or something like that.
Yeah.
Or the 2000s, because that was going to be the, and we were going to fly to Mars, and apparently there's different constraints, but those are key. We keep selling those items. Anyway, we got a little bit distracted here. So Parkinson's Law and process. It's one of the reasons why we have process debt is Parkinson's Law, because we don't simply allocate time to getting better at our craft.
Yeah. Thinking back over your career, were there certain conditions where that was cultivated, or has that always been a challenge for you? Can you think of roles that you held where you guys specifically blocked time to think about process improvement?
No. I mean, like, I wish the answer was yes.
Yeah.
Right. Like, what's funny, here's what's typically happened in my career. I just got really dogged on something that no one really cared about that was very important.
Yeah.
And I just ground on that thing for a year, for 2 years. It literally didn't matter because I knew it was important, and I knew the outcome when it landed would be incredibly valuable. And so I would basically borrow and steal people's time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I was, you know, literally go and get things done. And then at the end, they'd be like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Where's this been?
Yeah.
You're like, no one saw it.
Yeah.
Right. Like my time horizon was really long because it was really about outcome. And yet, you know, on the process side, that's really to deliver to internal customers or external customers. That's not necessarily around the process of doing business.
Yeah.
Which again is like, you know, last week we talked about rituals and the importance of just doing things over and over again. Like, we don't think about the impact that we can have on those repeatable processes if we improve the repeatable ones, because oftentimes we don't think about the process of doing the work. We just think of what's expected today. Right, which is a fancy PowerPoint or a new spreadsheet.
Right. What you're speaking to is, if we get 20 requests a month, how do we think about how the request shows up, how we prioritize or accept the request, perform the work, and deliver it? We're so often just trying to catch the next ball and make sure we don't drop it. I'll tell you, like you, very few, I've done a considerable amount of concerted work around process improvement in teams, facilitating process change, helping drive adoption. But there's really only been one or two roles in my career where I was held accountable for a very structured recurring process. And the one that immediately comes to mind as you bring this up was, we would do monthly sales reports. And at the time, our tools weren't sophisticated enough, and the tools we had made ugly stuff. And so we were basically downloading data and manipulating it in Excel and then pasting crap into PowerPoint, but super time intensive. But because we had, you know, the reporting cycle, the goal was to get fresh information into the hands of decision makers as quickly as we could, which I think that goal is still very much the same the world around, right? But at the time, this predates any of our cloud-based stuff. And so much of the fantasy of data warehouses, we were doing it in Excel. We'd take a flat file, we'd dump in the flat file, and then it was pre-mapped to populate all of the appropriate reports. So if there was a delay, it was in, you know, capturing those reports that were structured in Excel and grabbing the screenshots and pasting them into a new PowerPoint file that we could then distribute. What's interesting, though, is that over the course of about 4 months, we cut our time in half and cut our time in half again. And sure. As an Excel jockey, you appreciate, you know, what will Visual Basic do for me? And I think that today's automation tools, you know, the challenge is that we haven't done the process first. Instead, we lead with tooling instead of with process and desired outcome. And so it's really hard to know that what we're delivering is useful if all we're doing is accelerating how fast we push stuff out. And so that first one is almost by necessity a little bit of a slow slog, because we have to explore, we have to understand what's available, and then we have to make conscious choices about what's included. So Parkinson's law is really interesting, because unless there's urgency in that, the design of a process can take months, when in truth, you know, it's like, how many requests did we get last month? How many results did we deliver? And how do we do those? There's outliers, let's identify them. But that cycle time, you know, if you're doing that hard look at process once a month for 3 or 4 months in a row, it can get tightened so fast.
Well, what's interesting is like that you're talking about like precision.
Yeah.
Right. And I think one of the maybe myths around process is that they have to always be precise, right? Yeah. And in knowledge work, they just don't, right? And what I mean by that is like, you might have a metric of, I want to make sure that like from a quantitative and qualitative, like I want to be able to quantify that there's X amount of people that I have that I'm actively engaging.
Yeah.
The qualitative, it also needs to be cut. That can be kind of nebulous. And so it doesn't necessarily have to be super precise, but it has to be repeatable.
Right.
And so again, it's like, you know, the whole Parkinson's law of like, look, can you make it better? You 100% can, right?
Yeah.
And you always should, but that's an infinite problem, right? Which is like, look, on the process side of the house, like, it should be consistently getting better.
Yeah.
And it should be tightening from like you said, from an output standpoint and from a quality standpoint. But we're funny as humans because we just want it to be shiny. And so we change it all the time. And then you don't have process. You basically have new shiny things.
Right.
That may or may not like align to the decision maker, right? Because what you don't want is you don't want a board member to be just amused and amazed with the shiny object when you don't understand that that shiny object is 0.1% of your total revenue.
Yeah. Which is a legitimate risk, right? We get excited about things that excite us. So
correct.
New information or a new toy, a new tool, it quickly captures our attention. I do think that I think it's easy to neglect process, especially recurring processes, because they aren't shiny and sexy. It's like the drumbeat, you know?
Yeah.
A couple exceptions, and drumming aficionados, most people might know the names of the lead singer, the lead guitarist, not always the drummer or the bassist. Those are those very measured recurring things that everybody else falls in step with. And so whether we call it ritual or recurring process, there's a lot to be said for putting it on the clock. I do think setting expectations around a healthy duration, and this is where benchmarking, I think, helps us get out of the Parkinson's law as teams within organizations. When we go out and find out what is the typical, in the accounting and finance world, they'll talk about the month-end close. So business is done for the month of October. So how many days until we can see the results, until all the financials are settled? And over the years, teams have said, we can't possibly do it in less than 12 days. And other teams will say, heads are going to roll if it takes more than two. How fascinating that we could have such a variety of expectations when they're doing the same thing. They're closing the books for the month. And yet it has everything to do with, you know, what's deemed tolerable. So
correct. What's interesting, and I've, you know, we both have been around fintech and finance so much throughout our career. It's very interesting because that ritual of the monthly close and the standard reporting, which is the balance sheet, the income statement, and the cash flow statement, you can drive a lot of business just on the monthly close and those three documents, right? But you go outside of finance and you go into operations and you might have inventory metrics and you have sales, but like, it gets so much more nebulous.
Yeah.
Right. And so inconsistent, even though most businesses are really doing the same thing, but there just lacks inconsistency. And some of that is because you're trying to push those three reports, the balance sheet, the income statement, the cash flow statement.
That's right. Well, it's interesting. One of the most sophisticated reporting teams I worked on, and I continue to reference them, it's been years and years ago, but within about 48 hours of billing cycle completing, and it was a prolonged billing cycle. It was like a 72-hour billing cycle. But within about 48 hours of finishing it, we had pre-populated templates so that we could start to have... We could see who our, you know, top 10 customers were by region and how they changed month over month. We could see where we were churning on product, and we could see where our units timed price variances were showing up. It didn't happen overnight. And yet, you know, I've yet in my career to see comparable reporting. Part of it is I've drifted further away from that functional team, but rarely have I seen that kind of intelligence produced, let alone produced so rapidly after a month.
Correct.
End. Correct. And I think about, you know, it's kind of like driving. And so if all you have is a windshield and no dashboard, you're guessing at your speed and, you know, you're hoping you're not out of gas. I think most of us had a carb with a gas gauge at some point, you know, but when you, with today's dashboards in cars, we have a lot more information, right? From engine health to projected miles based on the gas in the tank, you know, make better decisions when we have more information at our fingertips.
Yeah, for sure.
This idea. Parkinson's law.
Well, it's interesting, right? So you brought up 72 hours, right? You also talked about 2-day book close and a 10-day book close, right? And the reality is you know what happens? you've got this habit of a 10-day close, a 2-day close, and a 72-hour close, right? The reality is like someone gave them a deadline.
Those deadlines
are important, right? Now, being said, like, it probably took years to get to the 72-hour close, but like someone was always pushing on that. And I think that's ultimately like kind of the main point here, which is Parkinson's law says, look, here is what, you know, in sports parlance, here's what the standard is.
Yeah.
And that standard needs to be met. And so it's always pushing towards that, whatever that standard is. And I think a lot of times businesses forget that there's people doing things, and actually doing a 70% job oftentimes is going to be better than that 95 high precision that an executive expects, because there's some fudging of numbers in getting to the 70 to 90%. Like the decision-making ability on 70% is going to be far outweigh the time and effort that it takes to get to the 97 when your that extra precision is actually not even paying off.
Yeah. That's a really good point, Chris. I think we're always making decisions with incomplete information. Right. And so whereas Parkinson's law would have us fill the time we have with whatever tasks we have, the flip side is, and I don't know what the law is, but it's how fast can we make a decision? How much information is necessary before we make the decision?
That's called Bayesian statistics, my friend. That's what that's called.
Being the dumb guy on our podcast, you just know the names of these things. I'll tell you, I had a ticket. I had this upcoming trip, and I had a ticket that had, and we're in the middle of a government shutdown. So I had a ticket that has me leaving Portland to Denver, to DC, and then on to Spain. And in the middle of a shutdown and many weeks in, I'm thinking, what are the odds that I'll get to Spain anywhere near the day I plan? By contrast, I went out and I started looking around. I have a ticket now that takes me directly from Portland to Amsterdam. So it completely pulls me out of the Briar Patch, right? And so then I have so I trade two stops in a unmanaged environment. So I have no control over that time, but I've also introduced all these other actors that could change my timeline in the original case. Now I have a single actor, which isn't in the middle of a governmental shutdown. So these dynamics, right, the likelihood and how much information, it's really interesting. Because I remember thinking, I'm super uncomfortable with backing out of this ticket. And yet I sure slept better after I rescheduled. You know, and I feel like that's true of so many elements in life. We're committed to it. It's a plan we've had in motion. We feel like it's settled law. You know, it's like sunk cost, even though I was able to refund tickets. There's a lot of these moving parts.
What's interesting is like process debt, right? So like make sure that you allocate time to improve, right? Hey. That's kind of the moral of the story.
100%.
And then, you know, maybe next time we'll talk about Bayesian statistics, which is essentially every time you get new data,
mm-hmm.
update your prediction.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I was a senior product manager for a very long time.
Yeah.
And that is frustrates the business more than anything. But the reality is the more information you have, the better your prediction should be. The problem is oftentimes the more information you have, the longer your timelines are, right? Because you run into the unknown unknowns and you start to knock those down.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's our next podcast is on Bayesian statistics.
Yeah, I'd love to come back to that in the future. And
yeah, let's do it.
Get more. That sounds good.
Cool, man.
Free time, buddy. It's always
all right. Thanks again.
Do this.
All right.
And see you.